You are listening to The Scroll, an audiobook about Ecclesiastes, written and read by Vance Neudorf. This is Chapter 7, Part 2. Master, it is true. Daniel and Moriah have secured a relationship. There is going to be a wedding at the Feast of Booths. Then why was she searching for me? Did she want to prove that I was wrong in saying she would never marry Daniel? Benjamin folded his large frame down into his familiar cross-legged position at Kohelet's feet. The polished head tipped back, and his sweaty face shook vigorously. Moriah has had lovers in her past. He paused, his eyes searching Kohelet's. But she has never secured an offer of marriage. That's not entirely true. There have been those who wanted to marry her, but after she trapped him in her bed, they got to know what she is really like. But Daniel is different. He is all about the rules and will not sleep with her before they are married. He believes her when she says she has also remained pure. He would never marry her if he knew about her affair with you. Benjamin looked intently into Kohelet's eyes. Moriah is greatly concerned that you might use that information to get even with Daniel for taking over the library. Kohelet patted Benjamin's shoulder as he stood to walk over to the window. I have no reason to ruin Moriah's wedding. That affair is in the past. My life has moved on. Benjamin sprang to his feet, but she has not. Moriah thinks only in terms of manipulation and betrayal. She believes you will act as she does, and she wants to make sure you will not expose her lies. Kohelet gazed at the sunlight on the hills outside the city. Enjoy was a word he now used to describe the simple pleasures of the day. It was true that the word could also apply to a loving relationship, but that was not what he and Moriah had in common. When their affair ended, there had been no latent sense of joy in what they had shared. It was a time he deeply regretted, but not to the point that he would seek revenge on her or Daniel. He turned away from the window. I will meet with her. I will let her know I will never reveal what happened between us. Benjamin put a hand quickly on Kohelet's shoulder. No, master. Moriah will never trust you. She is hoping you are no longer living in the city and won't hear about her engagement until it's too late. If she finds you are still here, she intends to force you out of Jerusalem or end your life. She said this to Deira. You could never tell when Benjamin's dark face was blushing, but his eyes looked down at the mention of Deira, for she had been a close friend or more of the slave when they had lived in the palace. Deira has taken quite a risk in meeting with you and letting you know. Benjamin nodded. And you took a risk in contacting her. Did you go to the palace? Benjamin glanced outside. We have a different place. There was a long silence, and Kohelet turned back to the window. What do you suggest I do? Deira says the marriage will take place on the eve of the Feast of Booths. Moriah knows that once they are married, Daniel's pride would never allow him to acknowledge anything from the past. But she has become obsessed with the thought that you might do something before that time. I believe if you just lay low and stay out of view, we should be fine. So I stay here in the apartment, caged like one of the blinded songbirds for sale in the market? Just for a short time. I will let your friends know that you need to rest for a while, for the sake of your heart. Kohelet frowned. He didn't like to complain to others about his health issues. Over the past year, however, there had been a marked decline in his energy, and at times there were sharp pains in his chest and arms. During the summer, he often had to leave the heat of the market and retire to his room for the afternoon. Benjamin withdrew. I will find us something to eat. I shall return as quickly as I can. He put his hand on the door and turned back. There is also some good news. The king will appoint a new chief magistrate within the week. Hopefully someone without an allegiance to Daniel, someone who might be willing to hear our side of the story, if it ever comes to that. Benjamin left the room, and Kohelet moved to get a better view of the palace and the sunlight on its walls. Daniel was walking up there with the city at his feet. The man who had connived to steal away Kohelet's position was now going to marry the only woman who had ever shared Kohelet's bed. He shook his head. Unless age had softened Moriah's heart, Daniel was going to be repaid in kind for his treachery. The thought of Daniel being with her brought a twinge of anger back to his heart. There were very few people in his life Kohelet truly disliked, but Daniel was one, and if he was honest, there were times that he had to admit that he actually hated the man. Benjamin's news about a new chief magistrate was intended to give some sense of hope if they were taken back to the palace. Daniel and the previous magistrate had been in league together, and there would not have been any chance of proving Benjamin's innocence. During his days in the palace, he had faith in the justice system, but life in the market had taught him that justice was a fluid entity that may or may not show up when needed. There really wasn't much point in hoping that the new chief magistrate would be more willing to hear his case. Qohelet retreated to the desk, blocking out the palace walls and focusing back on the scroll. He picked up his pen and wrote, "As I looked at life under the sun, I found in the very place where I expected justice to be carried out, there was evil instead. I had to remind myself that God will one day judge both the righteous and the wicked, for there will also be a time to evaluate every activity, a time to judge every deed. In a broken world, justice was always subject to manipulation and incomplete information. That combination made it impossible to sort out the complete truth of a matter. You could argue your case to the highest court of appeal, but beyond that you were left only with a distant hope, a belief that God may one day put the record straight. It was that faith that could give you the strength to pick yourself up from the ashes and move forward. The seasons of life would eventually run their end, and then everything and everyone would be evaluated and judged honestly. There was only one doorway to that future place of reconciliation, and that was through death. In this life, people who suffered injustice looked at that doorway in hope of something better, a fair world and a settling of accounts. But no one could show you for certain what lay behind death's door." He picked up his pen. "For now, God tests us by giving us the same fate as the animals. As one dies, so dies the other. People have no distinction. Both have the same breath, and both are subjected to the same final futility, for all came from the dust, and to dust all will return. No one can prove that a person's spirit goes upward while the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth. So I say there's nothing better than to find joy as we work, for that is our lot in life, and none of us knows for certain what the future will hold." In a strange sense, it was a certain end of all human life that increased the evil lurking in the hearts of mankind. The realization that life was short fueled their intention to pursue their goals with a vengeance, no matter who might stand in their way. Faced with a choice to do what was right and lose ground or step on someone else to get ahead, they almost always chose the latter. The same pressure that could see a person choose to do right was the same power that turned him or her into an evil brute, intent on running over everyone in his or her way. He picked up his pen and wrote again, "As I observed all the injustice under the sun, I saw the tears of the oppressed, but no one would comfort or rescue them, for power was in the hands of their oppressors. I declared that the ones who have died are better off than those still living under such conditions. Even more fortunate are the unborn, for they are not yet exposed to all the evil taking place upon the earth." Qohelet leaned back in his chair. These were difficult sayings. The birth of a child always brought the promise of something better, a change for the good. Yet for people living in oppressive situation, that promise was more often broken, and the little ones were the first to suffer. In that sense, it was better if they had never been born into a world full of injustice and evil. He bent over the scroll, and was so caught up in his work that the scuffling of feet outside his door startled him. Qohelet turned quietly around. It wasn't Benjamin, and few others ever climbed all the way to the attic apartment. Had Moriah's spies found him already? You've been listening to The Scroll, Chapter 7, Part B, a story of the writing of the book you now refer to as Ecclesiastes. You can find more information at artofwork.ca, where we bring ancient wisdom to life. Thank you for listening.